Hi, everybody. Welcome to SEND Network's ongoing Training for Trainers resource. Thanks for joining us on our journey to learn together how to make your transformational training even better. We want to encourage and empower you to keep growing in your confidence and competence as a trainer. Now, here are the hosts for today.
Okay, our guest today on the podcast is Matt Perman. Matt is a co-founder of What's Best Next. It's an organization dedicated to helping Christians understand and implement gospel-driven productivity. He's been a director of marketing and communications at Made to Flourish. He got his master's of divinity in biblical and theological studies from Southern Seminary and was director of strategy and internet at Desiring God. Currently, just started a brand new job. He's director of career development at King's College in New York City. He's the author of What's Best Next, How the Gospel Transforms the Way You Get Things Done. And his latest book is Unstuck, How to Get Unstuck, Breaking Free from Barriers to Your Productivity. He and his wife, Allie, are there in New York City now. Welcome to the podcast, Matt.
Thanks so much for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Well, I told you the first question I wanted to ask you was pretty simple. Why are you so passionate about productivity?
Yeah, this is interesting. I became passionate about productivity because of the biblical teaching that as Christians, we are to be abundant in good works. So in Titus 2, it says that Jesus died in order to redeem for himself a people zealous for good works. So we are to be passionate about doing good works. And in Ephesians 2:10, it says, we are justified by faith alone, but created anew in Christ for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. And there's lots of other passages in the teaching of the scriptures, I think, is summed up well by John Wesley, who said, do all the good you can to all the people you can in all the ways you can, as long as you can. And the connection I discovered is that productivity practices and tools help us be more effective in good works. And you see that when you ask, what are good works? And what's pretty neat is when we realize from the doctrine of vocation that good works aren't just rare and special things we do, like when we volunteer at a soup kitchen or go on a missions trip. Those are good works, but good works in the Bible's conception are also the things we do in the workplace and in our jobs from 8 to 5, because a good work is anything done in faith for the glory of Christ and good of others. And that means as Christians, we can be doing good works all day long. So what I saw was all of us get frustrated with productivity. We have too much to do and too little time to do it in, and we struggle with stress and even anxiety. And that's one of the things that motivates a lot of us to learn about productivity. And that's true, and that's important. But what I learned is there are these deeper and even bigger reasons to care about it. If we can learn how to manage our time better and be more productive, that means we can do more good works and do them better. And that is exciting.
Oh, that's very exciting. One of the things that we're encouraging, of course, our church planters to do is engage the members of their congregations in missional activity, you know, the good works that you're talking about, in order for the gospel to advance. And I think it's helpful to help planters help their people find the margin to be able to do those good work.
And you mentioned Matt about Wesley, and I often think about Wesley that the difference between he and Whitfield was that Wesley organized, whereas Whitfield just preached. And so as a result of that, the movement that happened because of the organization of Wesley. I mean, both guys were completely anointed by the Holy Spirit, but Wesley had something Paul had, and that was the ability to network, to maximize his time. I believe that Wesley and Paul were wired very much the same in that. They Paul didn't maybe put it in the terms and use the vernacular that Wesley did, but you can see he was a highly organized, very strategic individual. So you had me at Wesley.
That's awesome. Well, I totally agree. You see these things in the Apostle Paul too. You're right. He look at Romans 15, for example. He lays out his plan. He had strategies. He
yeah.
had plans. It's amazing. And then, of course, church planting was his chief strategy for advancing the gospel. Paul was organized. He had a grand vision was based on the scriptures and what the Lord had called him to do. And he also planned. And we see that in Wesley, and that is a key part of why Wesley has had the impact he has. So, amen.
So we've got trainers of church planters that are listening to this podcast. Many of those guys are young pastors who founded their churches. God's doing some great things. Most of these guys are experiencing not maybe as much church growth as they would like, but they're experiencing some church growth. So there's more people to care for. They're married. They've got kids. Some of their kids are having health problems and school problems and so on and so forth. And now we're asking them, oh, and by the way, we want you to train the next batch of church planters. And a lot of these guys just trying to figure out, how can I make the margin to do it? I want to do it. I know I've been called to do it, but man, I'm busy. So, so what would you say to a busy planner like that about how to leverage some of your tools to create some margin for those good works of training?
Yeah. Well, first I'd say I really admire these guys that you're talking about. I think they are the superstars of the kingdom. They're the ones who make so much work, and it's very admirable the sacrifice they put in terms of time and energy and commitment. So first, I would give great encouragement and say their efforts are appreciated and will be fully known one day when the Lord returns. So keep it up. Now, in terms of, boy, how do you create margin? How do you do this without burning out, without overloading yourself? I'm going to start with just one tip, because I find it to make the biggest difference in my life. Sometimes I have so much going on, my brain feels scrambled and I feel pulled in so many directions. But if I get up early and then have my devotions and at a good time and get to work, and if I spend the first hour at work planning my day, determining my priorities, getting organized, and taking care of any urgent and important matters that have maybe been bothering me, if I give an hour to those type of tasks with great focus, I find I have solid peace of mind for the rest of the day, no matter what happens. So if you can get the urgent and important stuff done in the first hour, it makes a world of difference.
And then maybe you can dive into the important non-urgent stuff, which is really where the deep work that you talk about in your book needs to take place.
That's right. That's where the deep work is. And that's one of the biggest goals of time management, is to enable yourself to spend as much time as possible on the important but not urgent. Mm-hmm. What gets in the way of that is, first, there's not important but urgent things that pull us away. And we need to learn to say no to those things, because they're not important. But there are also important and urgent things. And a lot of times those things distract us until they're taken care of. And so I've found having a point at the beginning of my day where I can just sit back and capture what are the main things pressing on me that really need to get taken care of and are important. And if I get a chunk of those out of the way at the start, then I have greater clarity of mind in order to give my time and concentration to important but not urgent things for as much of the rest of the day as possible.
Okay, so a lot of our guys, they're leading a local church, and then they're part of this SIN network that we have to influence church planting in a deeper way all across the country. And a lot of these guys may have one or two other things. Now, I don't know for sure, but I'm guessing you still probably connect a little bit with the Desiring God people. You probably still connect with the Made to Flourish people. You've got your own What's Best Next deal, and now you're at King's College. So you've got these lanes, right? Yeah. How do you kind of manage all of those competing urgencies?
Yeah. You know, I was actually observing that this morning, and yeah, I do still stay in touch with all those lanes. And a big part of keeping that together is keeping up with my email, ironically. And I find sometimes when I do a certain task, it might be a task for my business, What's Best Next, but it's related to something a friend of mine who still works at Desiring God is interested in. So I'll send him a link. Hey, check this out. Thought you might be interested in this. And so I see there's overlap. As I'm doing one thing, it relates to people in other spheres, other networks. That's key. And then giving myself this hour, or sometimes hour and a half, first thing in the day. And during part of that, I do my email that came in overnight or towards the end of the day yesterday. And as I keep up with that, I find everything kind of converges in my email. And that allows me to keep up with all these various avenues.
And then, as I understand it, you probably do the emails, I'm guessing, in the morning.
Yeah.
And then you don't go back to email, right? Until afternoon?
I might, yeah. So I don't check email continually. That's the big piece. I know a lot of people, they leave it open all day long and even get a ding when they have every new message. So they're interrupted almost every 5 minutes, or they're constantly going back and forth between email and the other work that they have to do. And that is a recipe for failure. It reduces your concentration because you're switching gears so often. So what you need to do is check email at set times. Now, some people are not comfortable with how infrequent, so to speak, I might check email throughout the day. So I might do it first thing, get it to zero, get my inbox to zero, and then I'll check it again right before lunch, then check it again mid-afternoon, and then maybe before I go home. Some people say, whoa, that's not enough. And that is a lot. That is a lot of time given to email. And it saves me time because I can dispatch the email more efficiently, because each time I go in my email, I do all of it. And then I'm back to zero. I'm done. And I'm fully focused on my next tasks. And I get those done faster because I'm not going back and forth with my email. So there's a lot of psychological research that's been done that shows this is the more effective way to do it. If you're not comfortable checking email just four times a day, you can increase that. Maybe it's every half hour for you, or maybe it's every hour. That's fine. But make sure that you are not checking email continually. That totally decreases your productivity.
Matt, on a practical level, because I totally get that, and I like to immerse, but I always get those little notifications that pop up while I'm working on something. And sometimes they're so tempting, you know, you think, oh, I'll quick respond to this. Is there any kind of thing that you use, like a buffer or something that silences those?
Now there are so many more ways those notifications come, like in Dropbox. The notification doesn't necessarily come through email. It pops up in the upper right part of your screen. I got one just when we started recording today saying there's a software update. You can restart your computer and install it. I'm like, I don't want to deal with that. Some of those we can't control. I mean, there are ways to adjust notification settings, but what I find has the biggest impact is if your email is set to notify you each time you get a new email, shut that off. You can do that in settings. Then there's those other types of notifications, and that is harder to shut those down. I've found I just ignore until I'm ready to deal with those mosquito tasks, because that's what a lot of them are. Those notifications, they're smaller tasks, maybe quick hit tasks. And I try to batch those in with when I'm doing my email. I know a lot of times it can be easy. Text messages or Facebook Messenger, you get a buzz while you're working. I try not to check text messages right away, but batch those as well. That's a little risky. So you should have a special sound or vibration for key people like your boss or other people that, that you do need to respond to right away, or your wife, your kids, that type of thing.
So it sounds like what you're saying is like, hey, you gotta do whatever you need to do in order to create this space for the deep work.
Yeah.
And I was fascinated in the book that you said, you know, something like even the most busy corporate executive really only finds time for like 15, 16 hours of deep work per week.
Yeah.
Like uninterrupted focus. And I think the way I read that is like, if you can do that, you'll be the man.
Yeah, that's right. What's so cool about that is it's doable. 15 hours a week of focused, concentrated work is enough to make a big impact. It doesn't have to be all 40. And that's so encouraging because number one, it's not realistic to think we can be putting in 40 hours of completely concentrated work in a week. The nature of the environment doesn't fit with that. There will be interruptions and you need to be available for people. So you can't just isolate yourself. And second, I don't think most of us have the energy to give complete concentration for 40 hours. So be encouraged. 15 hours a week, about 3 hours a day is enough of deep work. Now here's why. Let me give you the productivity equation. This is one of the most eye-opening things for why it's important to have, do deep work, which means work in a state of complete concentration. You're doing one thing at a time all the way until it's done. Then you move on to the next. You're not multitasking. You're fully absorbed. And the reason that's so important is because of the productivity equation. And here it is. The amount of your productivity equals time spent times the level of your focus. So if you're more focused, your task will take less time. If you're less focused, you're going to have to give more time to your tasks. So how do you reduce the amount of time that you're giving to your tasks? Do them with higher focus. That's how you get more done in less time.
So that's especially busy for these young pastors that are trying to prepare weekend messages. Yeah. It's like, dude, turn off your email.
Yeah.
Get with the message, and then you're going to have a better message in less time, and then that'll give you some more time to invest in the next generation of leaders.
Exactly. And preparing messages is one of the really central applications of this. That when you are preparing a message, give it your full attention. Do not have email open. Do not be checking text messages. Be entirely focused. There are so many people, they say, hey, I can't even get creative until 15 minutes in. And so if you interrupt yourself every 5 minutes, you aren't even going to get to the stage of peak creativity. So, man, deep work is especially for preparing messages. Oh, absolutely.
What are some things, Matt, that will increase that mental energy? We talk a lot about diet, exercise. Is there anything that our people might need to know from kind of your wealth of, you know, knowledge from all the various factors? Like, what are some things we can do to increase our mental stamina?
Yeah, excellent. Well, I'm glad you guys hit diet and exercise. That's key. Going running 5 days a week for 30 minutes, if you can do that, I recommend that. It's simple. And it has a huge impact on your mind and your mental energy, that you're creating greater capacity by doing that. So that is really crucial. Second, take a full day off each week. And on that day off, don't think about work at all. That science has shown that actually allows your mind to replenish. Whereas if, let's say you just have one work task in mind that you want to get to on your day off, it keeps a whole bunch of windows open in your mind about work, which takes your energy. Whereas if you just have you completely turn off that part of your mind, then it's able to rest for the whole day. A third is have a complete stop to your work day. This is something it's hard for me, but stop work at a set time each day, whether 5 or 6, and then you're done. And focus on your family or your personal life the rest of the night. And don't be going back to email even to check for a few things, because that opens up those mental avenues. Keep them closed. And research has found that allows your brain to recharge more fully, so you will actually have more energy the next day. And going back to the productivity equation, that means you'll be more productive the next day than if you had actually taken time the night before to get some extra work down. So these shutdowns and periods of rest are crucial.
Well, I have to say that reading that in your book, probably the most convicting thing for me, because I'm one of those guys that, let me see if I can do something, you know, for this half hour between 7:30 and 8 o'clock and blah, blah, blah. And so I need to develop that habit, because you make a very compelling case for why to have a hard stop to your work day.
Yes, man, it's so important. I find it so helpful and very hard to do. I have the same inclination you do at 7:30. I'm like, oh, I got a half hour. I want to do maximize it for work. Not good.
So let's say you're king for a day, and you could create the ideal schedule for a busy planter pastor guy. Yeah. How would you structure his day, his week, so that he has some margin, so that he can invest in future leaders and planters?
Yeah. So in order to invest, so the first thing I'd do is I'd have him write out his main responsibility areas. And usually it's 5 to 7. So there's too much detail to go into that right now. But obviously one of them, well, let's assume he's preaching every week. So one of them is message preparation. I'd say slot that into Friday. Do it on Friday. Have Friday be entirely for that. Then I would say, do this thing I'm talking about, an hour, hour and a half every morning where you're doing, you're getting your email caught up and doing urgent and important tasks. Be doing those. And then think in terms of time blocks throughout your week. Have a certain block of time where you are especially available for pastoral care of people. A time where you are available to do training of the other church planters and of the trainers of church planters. And that might be, maybe it's Tuesdays 1 to 3 and Wednesdays 1 to 3, I don't know. But that's when you do the tasks that are involved in training and estimate the time it's going to take. That's very powerful. Instead of just diving in and say, I'm going to give as much to training this week as I have energy and time for, and then just kind of plowing in, it's not going to work. Instead, you got to start with your time, not with your tasks. Say, how much time do I have to give to the training this week? And how much are the specific tasks going to take? How many people am I able to meet with? How long is each of those meetings going to take? What do I have other messages to prepare? Other trainings? What else do I have to do? And try to estimate your time so you don't overload yourself. It's like organizing a closet. If you have more stuff than will fit in the closet, doesn't matter how organized you are, that closet is going to be a mess. So first you got to know what you're dealing with, what you got going on, and how long it takes. Then you reduce it to fit the time available.
And you've got kind of a model for that. Is it DEAD? Am I remembering that correctly? You know?
Yeah. To eliminate stuff. Yep.
Delegate, eliminate, help me remember.
And defer.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Dead.
So run through those real quickly for everybody, because that's really helpful. That's in your first book, What's Best Next, and I think you referred to it in this book.
Yeah, that's right. So DEAD, it is intended, that acronym, to make it easy to remember. This is about getting rid of stuff. It's about killing the stuff that we don't have time for. And the first way to do it is the D, delegate. So delegate tasks to others. And that is actually not only good because it saves you time, but it increases the capacity of the organization, of the church, of the team because those tasks are very valuable for others and opportunities for them to grow. So delegate. Second, eliminate. Some stuff just doesn't need to be done. And if you say to yourself, if I was starting over now, what things would I not be doing? And that question can help you identify some things. Maybe you're just doing them because you've always done them, but they don't add much value. So eliminate. A, automate. Get as much as you can into automatic routines. Obviously, like bill pay is a huge thing there. Other things that you can just get into a system that take care of themselves. And then D, defer. Some things, they might need to be done, but they don't need to be done yet. Put it on your calendar or a list of future tasks to be dealt with at a later time.
So when you're trying to help somebody change, become more productive, it sounds like you're saying, okay, I want them to understand some of the root causes of lack of productivity. And then I want them to just pick a few things, pick one thing, focus on that, try to help that become a habit, and then pick something else.
Yeah, that's a much more effective way to change. Otherwise, we overload ourselves. So I find it helpful, pick one or two things, start there, make them habits, and then you'll be getting momentum. And as those become habits, you'll be able to make other changes as well. So an incremental approach, you know, and Jesus,
go ahead.
I was going to say, Jesus said, you know, to his disciples, I have much more to tell you, but you can't bear it now, in the book of John, before the crucifixion. And so Jesus seemed to have this approach. You got to be, it's about growing people, not just installing change. And then this is also one reason he bears with us for so long. Man, how many times do we make the same mistake over and over again? Well, the Lord is in it for the long term, and he keeps working with us because it's about heart change from the heart. And eventually we do overcome and grow out of some of our immaturities and sins over time as our heart changes, as opposed to just changing behaviors. You have to change mindsets, worldview, the heart, not just behaviors. And that's why so much change fails, because we're just trying to change people's behavior without changing the roots of the behavior in their worldview.
So just a couple more, one more question, and then we got to wrap up our time here. We talk about Whitfield and Wesley, and we know those guys, you know, kind of butted heads on some theological points, but I'm taking from Matt, I haven't talked to him about this, but if you were at Desiring God and graduated from Southern Seminary, your theology is probably a little bit on the Reformed side of things.
Yeah.
How has that, like a Reformed view of theology, shaped your view of productivity, efficiency, effectiveness, flourishing, and all that?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I am on the Reformed side, for sure. And it gives me a lot of joy, actually, because I know, and I'm not saying a non-Reformed person can't say this either, but I know God's purposes will succeed, not simply in the ultimate sense, but also in the day-to-day sense, weekly and yearly sense. And that gives me joy. It gives me comfort in discouragement. And it gives me motivation, because one of the least motivating things is to think you're going to fail. And I've been in situations where this seems like this is not going to work. It's not going to go anywhere. And not by any intentional decision, I would just find my brain to be less motivated, less engaged, and even resistant. Well, because of God's sovereignty, we know that all of his purposes will succeed. And so nothing we do is in vain. Paul actually connects predestination with productivity in Ephesians 2:10, where he says we're created in Christ for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. So I find it very motivating. None of that is never is to say that another perspective can't find the same comfort, or that, you know, There's no such thing as sin and frustration. There certainly is. But God rules over all of that and can still accomplish his purposes in spite of people's sin and rebellion.
Okay. Hey, Matt, where do our listeners to the podcast here find out more about you? How do they follow you and all of that?
Yeah. Go to whatsbestnext.com. That's my website. I've been blogging there for 10 years. So there's lots of free resources. We also offer coaching, productivity coaching, one-on-one or group coaching. I do staff trainings, keynote speaking. You can find out about all of that at the website.
Yeah, good. whatsbestnext.com. Thank you so much for the opportunity to hang out with you a little bit. It's been fun. It's been joyful. It's been enlightening. You encouraged a guilt-ridden leader here. So thank you so much for that. And God's best to you in your new responsibility at King's College.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I enjoyed it. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks for listening today. Our mission at Send Network Training is to equip multiplying leaders with reproducible systems to plant more healthy churches. You can follow us on Twitter at Send Network Trainers or on Facebook at Send Network Church Planter Trainers. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. This podcast was made possible by the Send Network of the North American Mission Board.